Good morning, everyone. Welcome to church. it is time for our awakening together Sunday morning weekly gathering. And it's wonderful to see you all here. I also love sitting here listening to that music that Lynn was playing as, you know, we were all coming into the room and gathering. So thank you, Lynn. That was really, really wonderful. I could almost see myself walking into a church, you know, walking down the aisle while the music is quietly playing. Everybody's sitting quietly. In my church of my imagination, everybody was sitting quietly and meditation or contemplation, just kind of listening to the music, and I just walked in and quietly took my seat. So it's nice to be here. But now it is time for us to rouse our attention enough to say hello to everyone and to greet everyone in whatever way you would. Again, if we were in a physical church, this would be the time of the service. If you're in a Catholic church, you know, everyone shakes hands and says, peace be with you, right? Peace be with you. If you're in like a Unity church, everybody grabs each other and hugs each other, and they may even get quite loud. I remember I used to go to a Unity church in North Carolina where we would have this part of the service and everybody was hugging and talking, and the minister had to make us sit down and be quiet at the end of the hugging because everyone so enjoyed that saying hello to each other. So I'm going to play a song that I traditionally play during this part of our service. It fits well with our purpose, Awakening Together. The name of this song is Awakening. I often call it We Are Awakening. It's by Deborah Pommel and Mitten. So please, everyone, enjoy saying hello to one another.
The calling of the mystic awakening in the flowering of the heart, everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
For taking the opportunity to greet one another. I know sometimes when I go into some churches, some people are very shy for the greeting part. And then other people are so robust and so excited to greet one another. And I felt the robustness today, the so excited just to greet everyone. I love, you know, scanning down the side on the, I guess it's the right side of the screen, and seeing who all is here. And of course, most of you I know in one way or another personally. Either you're in the MPP program, or I've seen you in my own house, or I've seen you at retreats. In some way I know you. And so as I scan down the list, I can see your faces as well, and it's really wonderful. There's a few of you I've not yet met in person, and hopefully we will meet soon. I know there are opportunities coming up to get together. I would love to meet everyone in person. That would be fabulous. So let me share with you a statement of purpose today, and what I have chosen today to focus on is our third core value. We accept one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. We live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. And it's interesting that that should be the middle core value. There are two core values before it and two core values after it. And this core value is in the middle, like the heart or the soul. And I do think this core value is the heart or the soul of why we are gathered together in this church instead of sitting in some other church somewhere. It's because this is our purpose. We are joined together as equals in one shared purpose, which is letting go of the belief that we are these separate individuals and awakening to the realization of this one true self. This one presence or being that is non-dual, without beginning or end, absolutely changeless. We have it in our hearts to do this. But the question often is, how? How? So part of what we do when we gather here together in the sanctuary is we share the practices, we share the how, we talk about the letting go, we talk about the struggles, we talk about the realizations, and we also share from the clarity that comes as we let go more and more of the individual self as the thought of who we are. And as we realize more and more that one shared truth that is not only shared among each and every one of us gathered here, but it's that sameness, that shared truth that we share with Jesus. That sameness, that shared truth that we share with Buddha. That sameness, that shared truth that we share with Nisargadatta Maharaj or Ramana Maharshi. And it's that sameness, that shared truth that we share with every, quote, sinner, unquote, that has ever walked the planet. No matter how many people they have killed, no matter how many people they have injured, no matter how many people they have scarred, there's this one shared truth that is beyond all of that. And this is what we are awakening to. This is our shared purpose, and this is why we are gathered together here in this church. Before continuing with our devotional service, I have some announcements I'd like to make. The first announcement I want to make is regarding our weekly prayer circle. We've had a weekly prayer circle for the last 2 years, ever since beginning Awakening Together as a church. And the prayer circle has moved as of this month, as of August. It's moved to a new day and a new time. Prayer circle is now every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, prayer circle is now every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. You could say that prayer circle is about compassion. Compassion is realizing that the answer is always present to each and every one. Even though the one who has a prayer request may not realize that answer or sense that answer in the moment. The one making the prayer request often senses that something is wrong, something needs to change, something is off in the universe. And so what we do is we receive each and every prayer request that is given both to Awakening Together and Community Miracle Center. We're sisters in this purpose, sister churches in this purpose of prayer circle. We receive every one of these prayer requests, no matter what the prayer request is for. And our role in prayer circle, in response to a prayer request, is to be silent in love. We do not deny the experience of form that the requester is having. We also do not see it as some dire reality. We hold the space of stillness in love. We speak to the universe in its language, stillness and love, while also recognizing that the universe is fully present and has never turned its face from any of us. In fact, it reminds me very much of some of the lyrics I just heard in one of the songs Lynn was playing when it spoke of the vast, vast universe. And yet it said, you are even aware, you know, of every sparrow when it falls. There is never anything lacking. There is never anything out of whack. And what we do in prayer circles, we set in the stillness, in the silence, where that is realized. Now, if you have a prayer request that you would like us to set in silence with, you may submit that prayer request to regina.awakeningtogether@gmail.com. regina.awakeningtogether@gmail.com. And since we have prayer circle on Thursday evenings at 6 p.m., it's best to submit your prayer by probably 4 p.m. Eastern Time at the latest. And it will be included in that week's prayer circle. Also, I want to let all members know that you are invited to submit articles for the Awakening Together blog. This week, there was a wonderful article submitted by Karen Ann, and that article was posted. You can read about it. It is about her father's recent death and how she experienced that due to her deep contemplation of truth teachings, especially teachings from A Course in Miracles Manual for Teachers. You can read her article as well as other inspirational articles on the Awakening Together website under Inspiration, Awakening Together blog. Whenever a new article is posted on the Awakening Together blog, it also goes out in our daily updates. Again, you are all invited not only to read the Awakening Together blog, but if you are a member, you are invited to submit an article for the blog. And if you go to Inspiration Awakening Together blog, you will see the submission guidelines at that same link, where you can also find all of the articles that we have posted. Also, I want to mention again that we have a fall retreat coming up soon, very soon, in fact. Here we are in August, so we're rounding the corner now. For many of us, even though September is still officially summer, for many of us, September starts to seem like fall. So August seems like we're rounding the corner from summer into fall, and this is a fall retreat. So as you can see, it's getting very close. And one of the things that Jacqueline Eckert and I did this week was we assigned rooms to those who have already registered. This was to help us see how many rooms really are left. And we found that we're about half full right now for Jan Frazier and Bentinho, but we are almost completely full for Regina Don Akers. In fact, there's only two, maybe three rooms left. So we may request more rooms for Regina Don Akers if people continue to register for that retreat. There is a possibility that we could do that. Hello?
Oh, is that Regina?
Yes, it is.
Okay. For some reason, it said your call, you wouldn't accept a block call. So, and this is a Skype phone. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. So I am going to let go of the mic and turn it back to you, Regina.
All right. So are people hearing me now? Are people hearing me now?
They're hearing me now.
Oh, so I sound like God with an echo.
Oh, so I sound like God with an echo.
All right. Here's what I would like to try.
All right. Here's what I would like to try.
Turn off.
Oh, sorry. That's where the echo was coming from. I wasn't thinking. Okay, here's what I would like to try. So we've lost a few moments. So what I'm going to do is skip. Usually I would play a song, but I'm going to skip the song. And I'd like to see if Ken and Rebecca are able to take the mic so that we can go directly into the reading and directly into the teaching. So Ken and Rebecca, I'm hoping that you'll be able to take the mic. Lynn, if you could let the mic go, we'll see if they can pick it up.
Everybody able to hear us? Great.
Today's reading is from the spiritual teachings of Ramana Maharshi. A devotee was having trouble understanding Ramana Maharshi's teaching of self-inquiry, and so he asked, question, instead of inquiring, who am I, can I put the question to myself, who are you? Since then, my mind may be fixed on you, whom I consider to be God in the form of Guru. Perhaps I would be nearer the goal of my quest by that inquiry than by asking myself, who am I?
This is Ramana Maharshi's response. Whatever form your inquiry may take, you must finally come to the one I, the Self. All these distinctions made between the I and you, master and disciple, etc., are merely a sign of one's ignorance. The I supreme alone is. To think otherwise is to delude oneself. A story from the Purana about sage Ribhu and his disciple, Nidaga, particularly instructive in this context. Although Ribhu taught his disciples the supreme truth of the one Brahman, without a second, Nidaga, in spite of his erudition and understanding, did not get sufficient conviction to adopt and follow the path of Jhana, but settled down in his native town to lead a life devoted to the observance of ceremonial religion. But the sage loved his disciple as dearly as the latter venerated his master. In spite of his age, Ribhu would himself go to his disciple in the town just to see how far the latter had outgrown his ritualism. At times the sage went in disguise so that he might observe how Nidaga would act when he did not know that he was being observed by his master. On one such occasion, Ribhu, who had put on the disguise of a village rustic, found Nidaga intensely watching a royal procession. Unrecognized by the town dweller, the village rustic inquired what the bustle was all about and was told that the king was going in procession. Oh, it is the king. He goes in procession. But where is he? Asked the rustic. There, on the elephant, said Nidaga. You say the king is on the elephant? Yes, I see the two, said the rustic. But which is the king and which is the elephant? What? Exclaimed Nidaga. You see the two, but you do not know pray, be not impatient with an ignorant man like me, make the rustic. But you said above and below. What do you mean? Nadarbagh could stand it no more. You see the king and the elephant, the one above and the other below. Yet you want to know what is meant by above and below. Burst out Nadarbagh. If things seen and words spoken can convey so little to you, action alone can teach you. Bend forward, and you will know it all too well. The rustic did as he was told. Nadarbagh got on his shoulders and said, know it now. I am above as the king. You are below as the elephant. Is that clear enough? No, not yet, was the rustic's quiet reply. You say you are above like the king and I am below like the elephant. The king, the elephant, above and below. So far it is clear, but pray, tell me what you mean by I and you. When Nadarbagh was thus confronted all of a sudden with the mighty problem of defining the you apart from the I, light dawned on his mind. At once he jumped down and fell at his master's feet, saying, who else but my venerable master, Ribhu, could have thus drawn my mind from the superficiality of physical existence to the true being of self? O benign master, I crave thy blessing. Therefore, while your aim is to transcend here and now, these superficialities of physical existence through Atma Vishara, which is the scope for making the distinctions of you and I, which pertain only to the body. When you turn the mind within, seeking the source of thought, where is the you and where is the I? You should seek and be the self that includes all.
Second question from the devotee. But is it not funny that the I should be searching for the I? Does not the inquiry, who am I, turn out in the end an empty formula? Or am I to put the question to myself endlessly, repeating it like some mantra?
Maharshi's response. Self-inquiry is certainly not an empty formula. It is more than the repetition of any mantra. If the inquiry, who am I, were a mere mental questioning, it would not be of much value. The very purpose of self-inquiry is to focus the entire mind at its source. It is not, therefore, a case of one I searching for another I. Much less is self-inquiry an empty formula. For it involves an intense activity of the entire mind to keep it steadily poised in pure self-awareness. Self-inquiry is the one infallible means, the only direct one, to realize the unconditioned, absolute being that you really are. So ends the reading. Releasing the mind.
All right, Lynn, since I can't see the mic, let me know when I'm back on. Am I on now? Okay, good.
Yeah, I had my mic muted.
Okay.
Yes, you are on.
All right, thank you. All right, first of all, I want to say thank you very much to Ken and Rebecca for the reading. Sometimes I think it takes a certain sense of bravery to be willing to do a reading that includes Sanskrit words and other words that are Sanskrit, I think it is. See, I don't even know that. And other words that that we're not necessarily familiar with. So thank you for your willingness to do the reading today. I was reading this story this week when I was preparing to teach the Ramana Maharshi MPP class. When I teach the classes, I also retake the class each time. So I get to go through these classes many, many times. And each time I take one of these MPP classes, there's a deepening that happens in me. And this week I spent a lot of time struck by this story. I don't quite know where to begin because there was so much. But I think I'm going to begin first by jumping back to the MPP story, the MPP class on Buddhism. When we are taking the MPP class on Buddhism, we study a book by Thich Nhat Hanh called The Heart of Buddha's Teachings. And in that book, Thich Nhat Hanh repeatedly defines nirvana as beyond all concepts. Beyond all concepts. And as you go through MPP, you realize that nirvana, which is also often called no self, is completely synonymous with what Ramana Maharshi would call true self. It's also completely synonymous with what Jesus would call the kingdom of heaven or the kingdom of God. And you know that Jesus said, in order to inherit the kingdom, you must become like little children. As I have contemplated all of these teachings, my definition of little children keeps winding backwards, 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 until it's really a newly born babe. And if you think of a newly born babe, you know that newly born babe is before concepts. The newly born babe does not know what elephant and man is. The newly born babe does not know what above and below is. And the newly born babe does not know what you and I is. Yeah, innocent ignorance, Kathy. That's exactly it. In fact, that's one of the things I was going to say today is, you know, we talk about the thinking mind as ignorance, if we're using the language of the Hindus, you know, the thinking mind is referred to as ignorance. But there is another ignorance that maybe we could give a capital I to. And that is the ignorance of the newborn babe, the innocent ignorance. When I was contemplating this story this week, I looked out off of my back porch. I looked out where you can see a few other houses. You can see a lot of prairie. You can see some mountains. You can see the sky. You can see the Spanish peaks. And I realized, you know, if I just look with the eyes and do not let the mind define, as I just did for you in drawing the picture, if I just look with the eyes, there is no above or below. It doesn't exist. The above and the below only comes in when I bring the mind in with its learned definitions. When I look out on that at that picture from my back deck, there are no mountains and sky and prairie. Those only come into the picture if I allow the mind to define. So it's funny that the mind's learned knowledge is the ignorance that covers up the innocent ignorance. I notice we're still having problems with the sound today, even in this form. So the best thing that I can offer at this point, I think, unless Lynn has another idea, I see the mic right now is blinking in and out next to Barb's name. but yeah, when I look out from the I know mind, Kathy is hearing this even though it can't be heard. I notice that Kathy is typing what I am really teaching here. When I look out from the I know mind, the innocent ignorance is covered up by the veil of I know. And something is lost in the picture of the mountains and the sky and the prairie and the houses and the barns and the cars. And what is lost is that which is before concepts or beyond concepts, that which is called nirvana, that which is called the kingdom of God or the kingdom of heaven. And maybe most importantly, even though it's the same, that which is the true self. When I sit in meditation, you know, different thoughts arise. I'm sure you all have the same experience of the different thoughts arising while you're in meditation. And when I sit in meditation and these thoughts are arising, there are different things that are noticed about the thoughts. One key thing that is noticed about every thought that arises, regardless of what it is attempting to chatter about, whether it is attempting to chatter about a present circumstance in life or whether it's attempting to chatter about what needs to be changed in the future in order to make life better. The mind loves to do that. One thing I notice is every single thought is based on what I have come to call an imprint. Something in the past was experienced or read or seen on television or heard in a conversation, but in some way, something in the past was experienced and was imprinted on that I know mind. And now that I know mind is either bringing it back in the exact same form, for example, replaying a conversation, or for some people, maybe replaying a grievance. Or that imprint is coming back in a new form, imagining, for example, how to change circumstances in order to make the future better. And I'm sure this is what the Course means when it says, all that I see is the past. You know, the past and the imprints are synonymous here, right? As I look at these imprints, though, in addition to seeing the past, I see concepts. The concepts are learned. I even notice how many of my spiritual concepts, my spiritual learning, show up in these thinking thoughts that try to distract me during meditation. And I realize that if I had never learned or experienced a thing, not one of those thoughts could exist. If I had never learned or experienced a thing, not one of those thoughts could exist. In other words, none of those thoughts could exist prior to experience. Or said another way, none of those thoughts could exist for a newborn babe. Of course, they're here now. And so what is one to do with that? What is one to do with all of these thoughts that are based on imprints, that have so many concepts in them, and that cover up that innocent awareness, that innocent ignorance that is the true self? And the only answer that I have is that one must learn to disregard concepts. Now, there's a practicality where the concepts are going to be used. For example, if you are living with someone and you're asking someone, oh, can you go and grab my Bible for me. Where is the Bible? It is in the kitchen. Where in the kitchen? It is on the shelf above the toaster. You see? In that way, the concepts are going to be used. So, you know, that's just the way it is. That's just the way it is. But what if I spend a determined amount of time every day, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours, whatever I can spare. when I don't need to be asking people to grab my Bible from the shelf above the toaster in the kitchen. When I don't need to be doing anything. And what if I spend that time gently and lovingly ignoring concepts, all concepts, every concept that arises? And focusing attention instead on that innocent, ignorant awareness that knows not of concepts, that is both before and beyond all concepts, that is right here, right now, Nirvana, the kingdom of heaven, and most obviously of all, which is why I said, and most importantly, the true self. I mean, at some point, Nirvana and kingdom of heaven are also concepts, right? But somehow, true self, I, not the I thought, but I, as Raman referred to in the reading, is not a concept. You can experience yourself as this ignorant, innocent awareness without any thought of self, any thought of ignorant, any thought of innocent, and any thought of awareness. It's just experiencing the isness of what I am. The true self, completely beyond concepts and completely present now. Of course, when we come out of our dedicated time, it seems that we need to return to concepts. We need to ask someone to get our Bible from the shelf above the toaster in the kitchen. We need to stop at the stop sign. We need to read a recipe and cook a meal. We need to deal with what we have learned. But something within us is able to manage the practicality of it all without getting lost in the concepts in the way that we were before. In other words, you can come to see that there is no inside or outside. You can come to see that what I am is awareness. And for lack of better words, everything is within awareness. So there is no inside and outside, with the mind inside and the lamp outside. This doesn't exist. The mind, the lamp, are all within the awareness that I am. And yet, you can still refer to the tree outside that needs to be trimmed. And you can still look in the phone book and call the tree guy. There's a merging that happens. When the thinking dies down. And maybe this is why teachers like Ramana Maharshi talk about no doer. Because when the merging happens, when the thinking dies down, the doing still happens. But the definition, the thinking, the deciding, the all of that to some degree, and maybe at some point to a complete degree. But all of that to some degree is dying down. There's just a doing. A being. Loving. Enjoying. And none of these things have to be thought about. There's a naturalness that's so beyond human concepts that Jesus referred to it as the kingdom of heaven. And yet that naturalness only comes about when we take the time to let the concepts die. And how do you talk about the fact that the brain knowledge is still there to be able to walk over to the bookshelf and someone say, oh, look on the top shelf. There it is. Grab it there. Open it to page 35 and read to me what you see in paragraph 7. Like all of that can still be done? And yet at the same time, somehow, I mean, this is why people use words like illusion and dream. Because at the same time, somehow, none of that exists. At the same time, somehow none of that exists. How do you explain that? You can't. No one ever has been able to explain that. The only thing one can do is experience it for their self. The only thing one can do is allow the merging. By the letting go of the concepts. Inside, outside. Above, below, you, I, past, future, it goes on and on and on and on. Health, sickness, rich, poor, it goes on and on and on and on. You know, one of the mistakes we make on the spiritual path at some point, I know we've all done this, so we all know what I'm talking about. As we try to reach for the good side of the concepts, you know, we try to reach for the health, for the wealth, even for the happiness. We try to reach for the good side of the concepts rather than letting go of the concepts. And as long as we're trying to reach for the good side of the concepts remain completely alive. And the concepts are the veil that covers the true self. The innocent, ignorant awareness. There are so many things you can do to enliven your awareness of awareness. And it seems to me, at least in my experience, enlivening the awareness of awareness also increases the desire to drop the concepts. We then tire of the concepts more as we become more and more aware of the awareness. And one of the things you can do is exactly what I did when I was contemplating the story that Ken and Rebecca read. I looked out at what was right in front of me. And I noticed that without the mind, I could not
separate anything. In fact, I could not even separate myself from the mountains, or from the prairie, or from the sky. Not only could I not separate them from one another, but I could not separate myself from them without thought. It required thought to separate. Without thought, without concept, there was just awareness being aware. And the more we enliven that awareness, even through simple little practices such as this, the more motivation we have to spend time actively letting go of our attachment to concepts. And from there, everything else occurs naturally. So with that said, I'm going to play a song. Hopefully the sound is okay. We'll see. I notice people are commenting. But you know, it is what it is. So this song is called Where I Belong. It's by Corey Asbury. And as I play this song, you are invited to contemplate the teaching. Be still with the teaching. Notice the concepts that arise and let them go. You're also, of course, invited to donate to Awakening Together if you choose to. Here's the song, Where I Belong. Oh, you know what? How can I play the song and not have an echo? I just realized because I have to turn my speaker on. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to leave Pal Talk while I play the song. I'll come back when the song is over. But if I leave Pal Talk, I won't have an echo. So let me leave Pal Talk and turn up my speakers and play the song.
Your presence is all I am longing for. In the same place, nearness is all I am waiting for. In the quiet place, hear the sea. My soul waits for you, just like the watchman waits for you. Here I find the grace, where will be I'm like the waters when they pour down. And here I find the place where we'll meet the face to face.
I'm going to come back into Pal Talk now. All right, I'm back in Pal Talk.
Right, I'm back in Pal Talk.
Okay. Touching that sound back down, though. Okay. See how concepts can be helpful, how they can be practical. Going in and out of Pal Talk, turning sound up and down. Okay, and you have sound in Pal Talk now. That's wonderful. Of course, I have no idea what your experience was today because I'm in a different place, right? But therefore, the part of the weekly gathering that we are ready for now is for people to share based on their contemplation of the reading and the teaching. Now, I don't know how much of the teaching that you heard. So let's see what happens here. Is there anyone that has something to share based on their contemplation of the reading, the teaching, or just if there's something you want to share about your experience of being here today with the technical difficulties? Please put up your hand, and Lynn will manage the turning the mic over to you.
Well, I just realized I don't have to put up my hand because I'm on the phone with you.
All right, go ahead, Lynn.
This is just really, you know, I hate to say really wonderful, although I don't, because to see how people are so willing to check something out, do something different, be flexible, you know, I think we learn so much from these situations, and it certainly has been my experience that I have learned a tremendous amount about flexibility in the human heart and what people are willing to do and what people, you know, if you, I'm going to tell you, when we only had sound going to the radio, a whole bunch of people went to listen to the radio that maybe never even listened to the radio before or knew that it was possible to do so. And so I'm just going to ask one thing. If you did that and you've never done it before, do it every day. Come in here and listen, because there's wonderful things happening here. Wonderful things happening here all day, every day. I am a testament to that. And as far as the teaching and the story and it just comes right down to this idea that what we believe is real in form, and how we see things and perceive things, it is really so subjective and absolutely has nothing to do with reality, nothing to do with what is really here. And I don't know if you understand or can grasp this, but because I do it all day, every day, I recognize the great desire that we have to see things correctly and how easily our perception of the form stops us from being able to do that. And this in particular, doing this thing, you know, how much we want to communicate and connect with each other. How much we want to know and be with each other in our hearts. And so we do these things that are, I mean, look how insane it is. I'm talking into a metal thing that is sending a signal to a box in my house. It's sending a signal to a satellite that is high over the earth. Are a series of satellites, not just one, a series of satellites that are sending these thoughts and these ideas and these words back through boxes into people's homes where they're sitting and listening. This is how much we yearn for the connection of our reality and how much the perception of what is happening is blocking us from being able to do that, because we can connect right now, immediately, without the use of any instrument. And yet, because we have that mistaken idea about what is, we don't do that. And I see that Jacqueline has her hand up. So, Jacqueline, I'm going to give you the mic, my friend.
Thanks, Glenn. Can you guys hear me? Good, thanks. Regina, your talk was just beautiful. I was able to listen to it on the radio. And it was just so inspiring. You know, I recognize the experience that you're talking about, where you just cannot separate yourself from what you're looking at, from your surroundings, where, you know, I've done that. You know, it's like, I recall a time when I'm little, when I like, quote unquote, came out of meditation. I'm looking at my hands, and I just couldn't identify what those things were I was looking at. And just to hear you remind me of that is just so inspiring. It makes me want to drop everything, all the crap that I seem to be doing all day, every day, and just be in that silence, you know. And it's like these concepts, even concepts of hand, chair, lamp, you know, this is what, of course, the miracles is trying to get us to look at. These are the blocks to love's awareness. These are the blocks to the awareness of just being, of just isness. And ego, and I've had some folks tell me this lately, you know, who wants to just sit around and is, you know, who wants, that sounds awful, sounds boring, that loss of self sounds awful, but it's, but it's not. It's the most exciting, invigorating place you can be. And I forget what you said about motivation, but I really feel that. I really feel that motivation to let go of the concept and to just really sit in awareness. that way. And so I want to thank you for the re-inspiration this morning, and I love you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Lynn, and thank you, Jacqueline. Yeah, what I said about the motivation was that the more aware you become of awareness, the more motivated you are to let go of concepts. And actually, Jacqueline, you just told a little story that shows why that is. If we are totally engrossed by concepts, we think because we don't have any direct experience that we really remember, we think that concepts are exciting, and just ising, as you put it, is not, is boring. And the only way to find out that we're wrong about that is to try the ising. That's the only way to find out that we're wrong. As long as we keep listening to concepts, the concepts are going to keep telling us that that is boring. So, it's kind of like the only way to find out that the swimming pool is temperature is just right, just cool without freezing, but just right to give relief, is to step into the swimming pool. And that's what has to be done here. We have to begin the letting go of concepts. And you're absolutely right, that A Course in Miracles is telling us that our ideas, like that is a chair, that is a footstool, that is a computer, that those are the obstacles to our awareness of truth. Of course, we start usually in a much different place. We start by letting go of certain concepts, the concepts that really cause us the most suffering. We tend to be most motivated to let go of first, and so those are the concepts we let go of first. So we let go of grievances. We let go of, like, some of the things that I let go of were the belief in rejection, the belief in betrayal, the belief in being used by someone else, the belief in unworthiness and guilt. I mean, and when you let go of these particular concepts, we certainly feel much, much freer. But I know I used to have a belief that when I let go of guilt, let go of unworthiness, that I would be awake. And what I found is that when I let go of guilt and I let go of unworthiness, I was freer, I was happier, I was more clear, there were less obstacles, but I was not awake. And that's because there's more concepts than that. And in fact, the ultimate concept, they say, is the concept of I, right? Just I. I itself. But to me, what I find is that, again, sitting in that meditation and just letting go of every concept that comes up by here's how, letting go of every concept that comes up by shifting my attention to awareness. And just being with awareness. Just being aware, however you want to word that. And then as the next concept begins to arise, doing the same thing again. And the same thing again. There's not even a thought of I'm letting go of I, right? It's just any concept. And I is, in that way, I is just another concept. Any concept that comes up, shift attention away from the concept and back to the awareness. So it's no longer letting go of those concepts that make me suffer, right? Like it was in the beginning. It's letting go of any concept and shifting attention to awareness. And then everything else will take care of itself. That's the grace of God, or as the Course says, God takes the last step. So I want to thank you all for joining with me. I have one more song, but I don't know what the quality of the music is like, Lynn. Should I play my last song, or should I just go ahead and end a little early?
You can play a song, or I can play a song very easily. The quality wasn't so good, but what song would you like, and I'll get it and play it.
Well, you know what? I will just let you pick a song. So, so I will hang up the phone and I will turn up my sound and I will listen to the last song on Pal Talk before I go. I just want to thank everyone for coming today. I want to thank you for, of course, your patience. As Lynn said, we appear to be joining through boxes and satellite signals and all of that. And it's great fun to join like this.
and I wouldn't trade it for anything. I couldn't be with all of you all if I attended a local brick and mortar building here. And you all are my church because we do share that heart. We do share one purpose. And even if we occasionally have technical difficulties, just being here with you, even being here with you in the flexibility of being with the technical difficulties was a joy for me because of our shared purpose. So I want to thank you all very, very much for coming and for being with me during this little short bit of time. And whatever you do for the rest of the day, please have a wonderful and blessed day. I will be back here this evening. Maybe some of you can come back and be with me again at 7 p.m. Is that correct? Yes, 7 p.m. Eastern time. And yeah, Ken and Rebecca, thank you so much for being the readers on short notice. I appreciate it. And that's it. I'll hang up now. Everyone have a great day.
My all-time favorites, although I never play it here, and it is A Hindu Prayer by James Twyman.
From the unreal to the real, from darkness into light, from death to life, walked life. God, the Almighty, let there be peace on earth and all celestial regions. May the water be appeasing, and may the earth all be wholesome, and may the trees and the plants bring peace to all, woe to all. Shanti, Shanti, unto all. O God, lead us from the unreal to the real, from darkness into from death to life, walked life.
Shanti, Shanti. Unto all. Shanti, Shanti. Unto all. Shanti, Shanti. Unto all. Shanti, Shanti. Unto all.